I'm a contributing editor to Homepage News, the IHA news site, and I'm your host for this afternoon. Our session is your microwave listening? Privacy and other legal issues in the smart home. Michael Grafe, who's a partner in Mintz, Levin, Cohn, Ferris, and Papio, is going to speak to us today about the subject. And people do wonder if their social media and smart speakers are listening to them sometimes. My wife does. But it hasn't been a barrier to sales. So some people still fret about the purchase of at least some smart products. And Michael is here to tell us some horror stories and to address some of the privacy and legal issues in the smart home sector. So, Michael, please.
Thanks very much, Mike. Hi. So it's my pleasure to speak to you today. And if you have any questions while I'm speaking, feel free to ask them. There'll also be a question period at the end. So let's start. What do you think? Is your microwave listening? But the answer is maybe, maybe not. But if it isn't, something else is, okay? So let's look at one of these stories. So parents were minding their own business. All of a sudden, an Amazon package shows up at their door. It's a $160 dollhouse and $50 worth of cookies. And they're like, wait, where did this come from? So they went through their Alexa app, which keeps a record of their conversations. And their six-year-old daughter had been following them, instructing Alexa for many months. And when the parents weren't in the room, the daughter, Brooke, said, can you play dollhouse with me and get me a dollhouse? Apparently, Alexa immediately confirmed the order. Brooke responded to Alexa, I love you so much. And then the packages showed up at their door. Then obviously they turned on the parental controls. So this is just a story of your devices in your home are listening to you in one way or another. Of course, Alexa's job is to listen to you, but there are other devices that you have in your home or could have in your smart home, including televisions. And 75% of us have smart devices in the home, whether it's a thermostat, a television, you know, a Ring camera, a Nest camera, door locks, smoke alarms. Okay, so now you're wondering, what is a smart device? What makes a device smart? So on the left, we have a dumb device, for lack of a better term. We have a thermostat, which we've all seen before, probably used in our homes. And what does it do? Well, the thermostat basically has one job. You set it to a temperature and it turns on or off your heating or cooling to achieve that temperature. That's all it knows how to do. What is a smart thermostat? Well, what distinguishes smart devices from dumb devices is that smart devices collect and transmit data. And that's what makes them smart, because what the companies do with the data is process it to make this thermostat much more efficient. So this thermostat, the Google Nest thermostat, has motion sensors. It knows when you're in the room, it knows when you're not in the room. Use it for a month, it will learn when you go to bed, when you wake up in the morning, when you go to work, when you return from work, and it will adjust the temperature accordingly to make it much more energy efficient than the thermostat on the left. This is a smart thermostat. What else makes it smart? So it collects data. It sends that data to the mothership. The mothership decides, okay, we'll turn it on, we'll turn it off, we'll make more efficient energy adjustments based on the homeowner's patterns. So your Nest thermostat is going to be different than mine in terms of how it adjusts the temperature. That said, let's say I decided I want to put the temperature down to 58 or 60 degrees because I'm going on a one-week vacation, and with the dumb thermostat, there's nothing you can do. You come back to a cold house. Here you have an app, the Google Assistant or the Nest app. On your way back, you get a, the day you're coming home, you can just instruct the thermostat manually to, you know, be set at a certain temperature. So it collects data, it transmits data, and it also interacts with the user from right here in this room, potentially, okay? So what's the Internet of Things? So the Internet of Things, you've heard that a lot, okay? Some of you may know this, and I'm sorry if I'm repeating the obvious, but the Internet of Things is a collection of smart devices that work together, all right? A smart home is really a collection of home-based IoT devices that work together, okay? So why is this important to a houseware show? Well, let's say you sell a coffee maker, all right? And you want the customer to be able to start it when they wake up from their bedroom, let's say, all right? And so you can go and create this whole platform that has the coffee maker connected to Wi-Fi, and then you pay someone to design an app, and then they have it on their smartphone in their bed when they wake up in the morning and they can start their coffee. That is expensive. That is complicated. You need a platform. Google actually makes it much easier for you because it gives an API, an application programming interface, to allow your programmers to interact with something called Nest Weave, and you could actually tack on to the Google platform with your coffee maker, okay, and use it. And in fact, if you want, I forget what it's called, it's not powered by Nest or something, but you could actually dispense with your own app and have your coffee maker part of the Google Assistant Nest app. Google welcomes that, all right? I don't work for Google, nothing like that. I'm just trying to give you an example of how they're making it easy and they're open sourcing their software for your now dumb devices to become smart. Because the hardest thing to do is to create that platform, okay? It's called a platform, it's the back end, it's how the data is transmitted and received. Now, of course, this is a very simple device, coffee maker on, coffee maker off. But we can think of other devices potentially, I'll take your questions, that could be made smart, and the technology is right there in front of you to do it, okay? So let's look at an example, Yale Lock, actually. Yale Lock wanted to become smart, okay? Why? Because someone looks at their Google Nest camera, well, no, there's a ring of your doorbell right now, okay? You'll get a notification if you have a Nest doorbell or a Ring doorbell by Amazon. You'll get a notification on your smartphone that someone's at your door. You'll be able to see who it is on your smartphone. You'll be able to talk to them. You'll be able to listen to them. Let's say it's a FedEx delivery person. You could say, leave the package right there, thank you very much, just through your Google Nest or your Ring camera. I think some of you know that, okay? But let's say you're out for the day and you're out longer than you expected and your dog hasn't been walked, okay? And your neighbor wants to walk the dog. You didn't give your neighbor a key, and you'd rather not give them the code. But right here from this room, you could say, oh, Liz, come in, it's you, walk my dog, door open. Okay? So the Nest camera interacts with a Yale Lock, all on the Google Nest platform, part of the smart home. It's amazing. It's things we couldn't have imagined many, many years ago. It's really many, many years ago, because this is not new, but it is a trend. It is a serious trend. I'll just go forward a couple slides. 2021, last year was a $37 billion industry. This year it's projected to be $44 billion. Next year it's projected to be a $55 billion industry, okay? I will talk about secondary revenue generation from smart home products, okay? Because that's really the pot of gold, okay? It's not just to get on the bandwagon, it's also to create alternative sources of revenue, but let me come back to that in a minute. So what are we talking about today? We're talking about what is a smart device and what is the Internet of Things, okay? I tried to give you an explanation, happy to answer questions. Next thing I'm talking about, which I just introduced, is IoT data an additional source of revenue? The answer is an emphatic yes, okay? Then I will talk about, as a lawyer, what I'm here to talk about, securing the smart home, third-party risks, what you have to think about if you're a manufacturer and want to do smart home, what data can a manufacturer collect and share, Can you actually collect all this data? Is it legal to do that? Can you sell it? Can you process it? Okay. Laws governing the smart home, like, are there any laws? Very few, but there are some. And IoT and law enforcement. That's a pretty amazing story, actually. All right, let's go on. So this is the slide, all right? Some companies simply sell data to advertisers. Let's look at an example. This isn't one of those companies. And apologies if anybody here works for this company. I'm using it as an example, or maybe that's good. Okay, so this is a sprinkler system that you put in your lawn, right? And this is a smart sprinkler system. What makes it smart? Again, what makes a device smart is that it collects and it transmits data. Okay, your sprinkler system, let's say in your lawn right now, that might not be smart, is basically just turns on when you set it to turn on with the dial or the time. It's not collecting any data, it's just following your manually input instructions, okay, which are not remotely accessible at all. Okay, but this Ratio, basically collects data. What does it collect data about? Okay, it collects data about, is it raining? All right, and I know some devices do that now, but they're really just on-off switches. Okay, what is the soil moisture quality? You know, what zone are we in? What plants it's that you've programmed in, that it's asked you a questionnaire and it's associated it with you and your zip code, et cetera, et cetera. So all this data is constantly being collected, and it comes up with a more efficient watering schedule than a dumb, again, for lack of a better word, sprinkler system, okay? So basically, what does it have? Remember, the Nest has a motion sensor, all right, at least. This has rain sensors, soil sensors, flow sensors, okay? It also has data from sales complaints or reviews on the that's up in the mothership because you've already, it's been entered, okay? And data from other smart home devices, potentially, if you've given access to Ratio to have access to the data from other smart home devices as well. All right? So again, all this data gets input to Ratio, okay? These devices themselves don't do the processing. It's all put into the cloud. Ratio takes the data, it crunches it, okay? It comes up with a customized irrigation schedule. And what else does it do? So it shares the data with water utilities. So the water utilities know, hey, okay, this zip code tends to water more at certain times, depends on the rain, et cetera, et cetera. Water utilities are interested in this information a lot, okay? And they pay for it because it's basically, they want to know how much water is being used in certain zones by zip code, whatever it is. If you want to get really, you know, starting to get creepy, they could equate it with income level, and to the extent people have given other information about them, single family, whatever it is, they can take all this data, de-identify it, okay, and then sell it to water utilities, right? So let's look at another example, the Roomba. So you know, everybody's heard of this. Now the Roomba is smart. Why is it smart? Again, I know this may be redundant, but it's important. It collects data and it transmits it. And it adjusts its schedule based on the data that it collects and it learns. It learns how big your living room is, where the furniture is. It learns if there's toys, that this is probably a kid's room. So basically, use your Roomba for a month. It's basically mapped your house, all right, if you use it in all the various rooms. And again, all that data uploaded to the mothership. Again, if you have entered your zip code and, you know, your name and your email address and potentially your income level, if you answer those questions, there's all sorts of fantastic deductions that Roomba could make in the real estate market, which it has nothing to do with, okay? And it could sell that data, technically, and how many people live in the home, et cetera, et cetera. So smart home, okay, is cool, it's important, it's a trend, don't miss it, of course, because that's what your customers are going to want. But ultimately, it's also the big secret is that it's another source of revenue, potentially a very lucrative one, because data rules the world, okay? So let's look at this Venn diagram that I drew, because I am an electrical engineer. Okay, so the Roomba, well, let's go back to the sprinkler. It collects data like, did it rain? Is the soil moist? Where am I? Et cetera, for functionality, to be able to operate better, okay? It also collects data for other purposes. What's your name? What where do you live? What's your income level? Do you have children? All these things, right? And so somewhere in between, when it takes that data and puts it together, there's very useful information and deductions that it can make, as I've just spoken about at length, and that's somewhere in the middle, and then it can take that the data that it collects for purposes other than coming up with a good schedule, okay, or coming up with the best way to vacuum your room, and put those pieces of data together and monetize them. Okay. Okay. Now we're going to switch gears, now that you have sort of a taste of what is IoT, why is it important, and why is it potentially lucrative, okay? So we're going to go to how do you secure, like, what's up with security? I mean, we all hear about horror stories. So let's hear about another one right now, okay? So this, in 2019, this poor family had a Google Nest camera, which has speakers, by the way, and a microphone, and then all of a sudden they heard a loud squawking, similar to the beginning of an emergency broadcast alert, blasted from the living room, and a detailed warning of three North Korean ICBM missiles headed to Los Angeles, Chicago, and Ohio. That's pretty freaky stuff, right? Like, all right. Anyways, so how did that happen? Okay, well, clearly it's a hacker, but how did the hack happen? Well, it was pretty easy, because at the time, all Nest cameras were sold with the same username and password. Take it out of the box, it was like password admin or something like that, right? With your like routers, you have them for your internet, right? And they used to have all the same passwords and like on the box, and then you could change them, but most people didn't, right? Now that's against the law. You can't do that anymore. California passed a law called the Cybersecurity Improvement Act. And I think Oregon is the only other state to have done this, but it doesn't matter because you have to comply with California law if you're gonna sell in the United States, right? So IoT manufacturers must equip any IoT device with reasonable security features, intentionally vague language, appropriate to the nature and function of the device, appropriate to the information the device may collect, contain, or transmit. Let me see, yes. So for, and I think it says this in the law, it does. For remotely accessible devices, reasonable security includes unique pre-programmed passwords. So every time you take a Google Nest out of the box or your router or whatever, it actually has a unique password on it that nobody else knows. And also it has to have multi-factor authentication for the first logon. Everyone knows what multi-factor authentication is. I mean, if you don't, you do it a lot. The first time you started a device or you enter a website or something, they want to verify it's you, so they'll send, after you put in your password, they'll send a text message to you to make sure you're putting in your password rather than someone else. And that's very, like, standard high security, but not every time, because you, like, some things are every time, but not for smart home devices. Okay. So that's the California law. Now, what does reasonable mean? I mean, we know what reasonable means in terms of unique passwords have to be sent, but it depends what it is, right? If it's like a heart monitor or something like that has health, not a heart monitor, but something like, I don't know, like a vital signs monitor that you're wearing, right? And it's smart, meaning it collects this data and it transmits it somewhere to a mothership, then it has to have some reasonable security measures, right, that are probably higher than they would be for a Nest camera, I would say, because the stakes are a lot higher. So this is like a place where, depending on what device you have, it's good to consult with an expert or an attorney about what is reasonable in view of the device that you have to comply with, what security measures are reasonable in view of the device you have that you're making smart to comply with California law, okay? So now, there's this federal law, and by the way, there are almost no federal privacy laws in this country, all right? We are unique among westernized civilized countries in not having a general consumer privacy law. California has tried. They last year or 2 years ago legislated the California Consumer Privacy Act, but there's thresholds. You have to have at least 50,000 customers or $25 million or make half your revenue from selling data for the CCPA to apply to you. So we'll get to that in a minute, but the only federal law or the federal law with teeth is not about cybersecurity at all, okay? It's simply about unfair or deceptive acts in commerce. Section 5 of the Federal Trade Commission Act says it shall be a violation of this act to practice unfair or deceptive acts in commerce. That's very, very broad and has been interpreted very, very broadly by the FTC, who see themselves as having this job of enforcing the privacy standards that they would otherwise want Congress to have legislated. So, you know, there's a lot of law review articles and things about the FTC having essentially legislated by consent order, meaning going after companies who fail on privacy, using this section and making them sign up to these 20-year audit privacy commissioner things that really have the force of law. And they've done that to Amazon, to eBay, to Google. They've done that to all the big ones, okay? So this is a very interesting law. So let's see how it's been used in practice. Okay, so remember I told you there's unfair practices and I told you that there's deceptive practices. So unfair practices, according to the FTC, is having like no physical security and having like one of these vital signs monitors or something, right? Or just, you know, leaving a laptop of unencrypted social security numbers around. I mean, that type of thing that the FTC has gone after on the unfair side. And I'll show you some actual examples, okay? Deceptive practices is actually lying, saying, yeah, we got this. We have your privacy. We're not sharing your data with ABC. We'll share it with ABC, the marketers, our affiliates, and maybe law enforcement. And then they end up sharing it with app developers and, you know, their cousin, okay? That is a lie. That is deceptive, all right? They violate their own privacy policy. You're all of a sudden trapped under Section 5, which is a violation of federal law, okay? So let's see some actual examples instead of my legal speech. All right, so this is the same thing. So the D-Link routers had username and password both set to admin, and this was incidentally before the California's Internet of Things Act was passed. The FTC went after this. The user was unable to change the default login, and they left the security encryption key on a public website for 6 months, and they failed to encrypt users' login credentials. The FTC looked at that and they're like, no, that is just not even close, all right? So that is an unfair practice as far as the FTC is concerned. You can't do that because a router's goal is to actually like basically funnel all your data to the internet, right, from your home, right? And if they're literally giving no protection to consumers, it doesn't matter what they tell consumers, they have to have a minimum level of protection if they're actually going to be handling so much data. And so the FTC says, slap them with an unfair practices violation. Also a deceptive practices violation because they said, we got this. Promotional ads claim device were secure. Device software allowing password setup also indicated device was secure. So they said, it's secure, and it wasn't. So it was a Section 5 violation both for unfair and deceptive practices, and they had to probably pay a fine and sign a 20-year consent order and so on and so forth. So that's the, we'll come to another example in a minute of the FTC in action, okay? This is a federal law that really doesn't apply to consumers right now. The federal government has IoT devices, and Congress wanted to standardize how companies sell devices to the federal government and what standards have to apply to that, all right? This right now doesn't apply to consumer sales, but it's clear guidance for standards that have to be followed for sales to consumers. So basically, Congress empowered NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, to develop security standards for IoT sales to the federal government, and they did. And they published these four things, or three, and this provides guidance to federal agencies on what they should ask for when they acquire these devices. consumer smart home manufacturers are following, or at least know about, or are learning about these NIST standards. They're minimum security standards that should be followed, and if you want to sell to the federal government, you gotta follow these NIST standards. I don't have time today to get into them, but I definitely consult on them, and so this is very important, even though it's technically not applying to the smart home yet, okay? So what data can a manufacturer collect and share? Okay, so what do you think? Free for all? Can they collect anything they want? Okay? Well, I've sort of given you some hints. There's no general federal consumer privacy law. There's some exceptions like health, HIPAA. You've heard of HIPAA. If you collect health information, you probably don't. But if you target children under 13, you cannot collect their information without parental consent. That's called COPPA, Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. That's a federal law. Okay, that's why Facebook is only for 14-year-olds, and so, or like, you know, but 12-year-olds say they're 14, and Facebook, fine. Okay, so disclosure versus regulation. So there's not much regulation, right? But there is, California does, it's that state again, has another law called CALOPA, the California Online Privacy Protection Act, okay, which requires that you have a privacy policy. Every website you go to and every device that you buy that collects and transmits data has a privacy policy to comply with California law. It's not very stringent law. It just says you have to have a privacy policy. You have to tell consumers what data you're collecting and collecting, who you're sharing it with, and the categories of people that you're going to share it with. So you see everyone has a privacy policy now, okay? Now, if you say this is what I'm doing and here's what I'm collecting and here's who I'm sharing it with, and then you exceed your privacy policy, you are all of a sudden a liar and you are a Section 5 violator and the FTC could swoop down on you. So remember, whatever you say you're going to do, you better do that and not more, or you should change your privacy policy to comply, okay? Disclosure versus regulation. So I want to give you an example. So whatever the company says they're going to do, okay, they can do, all right? So the Nest camera, they say, here's what we're collecting from you. Set up information you provide, environmental data. What does that mean? I don't know. Video and audio signals. Signals, they're recording you, okay? They're listening to you, this camera. Facial recognition data to enable familiar face or technical information from the device, shared content. Facial recognition data to, you know, familiar face alerts is. So, like, basically you could open your door automatically or whatever if you know, your son or daughter comes to the house because it will have done facial recognition on, you know, on people if you enable that. Okay, so that's something that actually has to be enabled, but all the other stuff doesn't have to be enabled. They can just record you because they're telling you that they're going to be doing that in their privacy policy, which no one reads, okay? But it's there, all right? Now, what's interesting about this is what Google says here. Depending on where you live and how you configure the products and services, you may need to get explicit consent to scan the faces of people visiting your home. Why did they write that? Well, this very state of Illinois is the sole, I think right now there might be a few other states, but it's the strictest state in the union in terms of collecting biometric information, and you're not allowed, okay? That's basically what Illinois says, without consent, without a written release, all right? This is the law in Illinois. So you cannot enable facial recognition features on your Nest camera in this state without getting a waiver from the person who comes to your home, okay? Signed in writing, all right? So let's just discuss for 1 minute what is biometric information, just so people understand. Merely taking a picture of someone is not biometric information. Biometric information is information that allows you, enables you to identify that individual. Right now, pictures are not considered, okay, biometric information or video. But if you start processing it, facial recognition, so that the next time you walk in, it will recognize you, that processing of your face is now biometric, just like a fingerprint would be, just like your voice would be if it processes your speech and creates a speech pattern for anyone sitting in this room. That's biometric information. So it's information about you that allows someone else to identify you that isn't your name, okay? DNA, okay? But it's scary, right? Because like you walk down the street now and your picture's being taken all the time, right? Are the police using facial recognition? Probably not, okay? But you know, there are companies, maybe you guys saw the 60 Minutes on Clearview, that they do the facial recognition, they supply that data to the police departments, and then they can match people walking down the street with their name from the Clearview database beyond the scope of this session. Okay, so we're back. I told you I'd come back to section five, and we're back to section five. Again, this is federal law. So Vizio sold a television with tracking software, and they were tracking people's viewing habits, all right? And then sending that data up to the mothership, because you obviously the first thing you do when you take a new TV out of the box is like, oh, I want to connect that to the internet, right? Okay, so you connect it to the internet, and that's great for the manufacturer, but you're not thinking about that. You're thinking about Netflix, okay? So the FTC came in and said, well, tracking TV viewing activity and storing data indefinitely without telling people that you're actually doing that is unfair. Well, wait, no, forget about whether you tell them. The FTC said storing that data indefinitely is itself unfair whether or not you tell people. Now, in addition to that, they didn't tell people, so that's Section 5 deceptive, okay? Misrepresenting smart interactivity functionality. Video claim feature provided offers and suggestions, but feature did not provide offers and suggestions. Okay, whatever. Don't lie to your consumers. In your privacy policy, there's no upside, there's a lot of downside, and there's no downside to telling the truth because consumers don't read it anyway, but the FTC does, okay? All right. So here's another FTC thing. So this is an electronic toy, where the kids got an app, okay, that they were able to download. And of course, 9-year-olds know how to do this. Okay, 8-year-olds, maybe I can go even lower now, I don't know. But it asked these kids to play with this toy, to go to this website or download the app and put in some personally identifiable information. Personally identifiable information, by the way, is a lot like biometric information. It's information that will allow the company to identify you. So it knows you, this little 8-year-old John Smith, okay, plays with this toy between 2 and 5 o'clock and does the following things, and we create a profile, and we could target ads to John's parents because we know what kinds of toys he likes and how he likes to use them, all right? The mothership, right? This is all like, this is just building blocks of behavioral advertising. And they would love to get this information from kids because it's not filtered, right? But it's against the law because the kids were under 13 years old, and so you cannot collect personally identifiable information. You can collect how often the kid uses the toy, but you cannot collect their name and or email address or driver's license or anything that will enable you, the company, to match that person's name with their viewing habits. You could have aggregated de-identified data, that's fine, okay? But, you know, in this zip code, kids play with their toys, I don't know, create all this kind of data. But anyways, you cannot take personally identifiable information. That's a federal law violation, one of the few federal laws we have in the privacy sphere, other than HIPAA and, you know, and banking information, which is something else. Okay, deceptive practices under Section 5. Okay, they said it was encrypted and it wasn't encrypted. So again, lying is completely off limits, all right? That's just, this is just easy to avoid. The other one, you know, maybe they wanted to do it, but they didn't get away with it. All right, so here we go. IoT and law enforcement. All right, so you wonder about this. So do I, actually. This is like the stuff for lawyers because, unfortunately, the law here is not settled. So recently, you may have heard the United States Supreme Court decided a case, Carpenter, where the defendant accused was convicted based on his cell phone tracking, meaning that the towers he went to, they knew where he was, and they got this information from the cell phone companies. Was that a Fourth Amendment violation? Previously, there was something, I'm going to get a little legal here, there was something called the third party doctrine, okay, which said that anything that you voluntarily share is fine for law enforcement to use, right? So this thing called like, it was like a dial register, like the telephone numbers that you called, okay, that was subject to a Fourth Amendment case like 30 years or 40 or 50 years ago, and the Supreme Court said that's fine, third party doctrine. You called these numbers, they're entitled to know the numbers that you called. But now the Supreme Court's like, no, we can't do third-party doctrine anymore. Why? Why can't we do third-party doctrine? Because everybody has a cell phone. They're not really voluntarily sharing their location information by walking around or taking a plane or whatever. They're not really consciously doing that. It's not like dialing numbers. They're just going around their business around the country. Should the government be able to take that information, get that information without a warrant? The Supreme Court said no, because a cell phone is an indispensable part of your life now, okay? So similar to your car, the police put a GPS, you might have heard of this case also, this Jones case, Supreme Court 4 or 5 years ago, they put a cell phone, a GPS tracking device in the accused's car and they used it to convict him based on his comings and goings. And the Supreme Court said, no, that's a Fourth Amendment violation too. By the way, Fourth Amendment, unreasonable search and seizure, okay? So they said that that's also a violation. So the law is turning in favor of privacy for stuff that we do every day, drive and have a cell phone and have a car, you know, stuff like that. Now, having a Nest camera, is that an indispensable part of your life? No court has spoken about that, and certainly not the Supreme Court, right? IoT devices, are they indispensable? In 10 years or 5 years, if I give this speech, it'll be like, oh, yeah, of course. But now, IoT is still coming, you know, it's still not like every day everyone has it, but that's changing. And then maybe the Supreme Court will say, yeah, Nest camera, you know, Gale lock, you know, your Nest thermostat, that's all off limits to the government. So it's interesting how the law is evolving along with the times, and that's the way it should be. It's really good, actually. Okay, so it's great what happens with IoT and actually solving crimes. There are countless, just Google, there's countless stories like this, okay? So what happened in this case? So this father, unfortunately, killed his daughter. He's 90 years old, and he said that when he last saw her, she walked him to the door and handed him two roses in gratitude. But an unnoticed observer in the house later revealed that their encounter ended in murder. 5 days later, she was discovered, and her Fitbit from 5 days earlier when her father was there showed a significantly spiked heart rate at 3:20 p.m., and then her heart rate slowed rapidly in the exact time that he was actually outside the inside the house, and that was used to convict him of murder. So, you know, there's lots of good that comes out of this. There's no issue of search and seizure, she's dead, right? I mean, it, you know, it's an unfortunate case, but it's also a good one in that, you know, just like DNA and was now used to solve crimes, IoT is being used to solve crimes and will be used to solve crimes more and more, okay? Voluntarily, too, because you have a Ring doorbell, you actually can sign up your Ring doorbell to, like, a network of police. It's voluntary right now, okay? But a lot of people say no, all right? And law enforcement goes to Amazon anyway and says, well, I want the footage from the Ring doorbell. What does Amazon do, all right? So the answer is, remember we looked at Amazon's privacy policy, or we looked at Google's, we didn't look at Amazon's. But you look at Amazon's privacy policy, I guarantee you it says, we can share your data with law enforcement. And they probably have all the recordings that you have for 30 days or whatever in the mothership, okay? Because remember, collect and transmit data. It's not doing the thinking inside that little camera. All the thinking's happening very, very far away. Maybe not even in this country. And in the storage too, okay? So they can technically share this information with law enforcement, all right? Because they told you that they would. Now, whether that becomes a Fourth Amendment violation is subject to what we just discussed and becomes a whole legal morass, right? But they can do that. Now, remember when Apple refused to give out the code for the San Bernardino shooter who died, right? Okay, so they decided, no, we're not going to share that information with law enforcement. And that was sort of their way of saying we, you know, their signal is we value our users' privacy, et cetera, even though they probably had the right to do it under their privacy policy, which no one reads. But here, Amazon complies with the request 57% of the time, down from 68% in 2019, so trending towards less compliance, all right? So basically, I come back to that manufacturers can do whatever they want with your data, subject to unfair, deceptive practices, and what they tell you in their privacy policy, okay? It can't be outrageous because then it becomes unfair. Like, we'll collect your social security number and put it on a public website. Obviously, that's unfair, I'm being extreme, but what's unfair, what's, you know, that's stuff for lawyers, like me. Okay, go on. So, we talked about the California Consumer Privacy Act. This imposes a lot more requirements on companies if they meet these thresholds, okay? The main requirement that you have to know about the CCPA is consumers have the right to click a button, and you need to give consumers this right, to click a button saying, do not sell my personal information. And you might have seen that on websites and stuff, right? That's all because it's in the CCPA. So remember all this stuff I'm talking about selling personal information, et cetera, most companies don't really do it with names anyway. They de-identify the data before they sell it, okay? But consumers have the right, when they purchase whatever your IoT device is, to actually instruct you, if you meet these thresholds under the CCPA, don't sell my personal information, which means probably, this is an answer I don't know off the top of my head, probably you can't even be put in the data set de-identified, but I'm not sure. That's something which I'd have to get back to you on. Okay, what other laws govern IoT? So the other law is data breach notification, all right? Almost all states have these laws. So if they lose a laptop with all your credit cards or all your videos from your door, or the temperature in your house and when you go to sleep and when you go to bed at night and all that, they have to tell you, or they have to notify the state, And that's why you often get these letters saying this unfortunate thing happened and whatever it is, right? We'll do all these things for you, which don't really amount to very much, but they comply with the law, okay? So believe me, companies do not want to publicize when this happens, but they do, and it's not of the goodness of their heart. It's because the laws say that they have to publicize when a data breach happens. So that's another one of the few laws that exists. Okay, so we did the CCPA. All right, I'm pretty much at the end. All right, so takeaways. IoT is booming, don't miss the trend. IoT data can be an independent source of revenue, okay? If you want your customers to access your smart device remotely, your device needs to meet reasonable security standards having regard to the nature of information that you collect. Physical security standards, okay? Or you know what I mean, okay? Privacy policies are critically important. For a consumer to be given adequate notice regarding their data, privacy policies must include information, who is collecting the data, how the data is being used. There's a lot more. I just didn't put it all on this slide. But that's really key. Tell consumers what you're doing with their data. And then you could do it, actually. All right? IoT manufacturers can share data with law enforcement. Whether that is a Fourth Amendment violation depends. All right? In other words, it's never a Fourth Amendment violation if they get a warrant from a court. So when you say, I have a warrant, and they come in, that just means the court has said it's okay. That's not a Fourth Amendment violation. But if they call up Verizon and they're like, or if they call up Google and they're like, send me the video from this person's camera, okay, and Amazon does that, or Google does that, or the audio, or the comings and goings of people from this house, that could be a Fourth Amendment violation, all right? But that doesn't mean that Amazon is liable for that because they've told you that they might do it. And that's the last thing I wanted to actually talk about because that was in my topics. Can you be liable as a smart home manufacturer for data breach, hacks, and all that? The answer is, if you have reasonable security standards, if you have your house in order in terms of everything I've talked about today, you've consulted, you know, and have a good security program legally and physically in place, you've done everything right and this still happens, you're fine, okay? You're not negligent. If you don't and stuff happens, you're not fine, just like anything else, all right? So that's pretty much the answer to that. Okay, questions?
Does anyone have any questions? If not, I will start.
Okay.
When you're discussing smart home with people, maybe who don't have a lot of background, and you know, presentation gives you a great idea of how things have gone. What do you say in terms of, well, what do I need to know? What do I need to do? And what do you think is going to happen in the future that I'm going to have to comply with? In other words, what do I have to know and where should I be looking to make sure I don't go out of compliance?
Yeah. Well, you can get a copy of my PowerPoint. No, I mean, look, that's a very broad question, right? I think compliance with what? There's two main areas of compliance, right? One area of compliance is, I call it physical security. What are your actual firewalls? What are your actual, multi-factor authentication? What are you, do you ship your devices with unique passwords? Are you compliant with law, et cetera, right? Physical security, I call it, even though it's technically not always physical. The other is being transparent with your consumer in your privacy policy, okay? So those are things from a legal perspective you have to get your house in order. So security, private data handling, and then really if you do that all, you get all this amazing data and you have to learn yourself how to make the most of that. That's something which I've sort of given you a taste of, but there are people, not me, who can help you monetize that data. I can help you with the first two things, which are critically important, but collecting that data, aggregating it, and then having a new product is something which I strongly encourage people to do.
So, any other questions? Please. Let me give you the microphone. We are recording this, so you can go back to it soon.
Hey, thank you. How often do you see companies that are working in the IoT space or working in devices that are IoT connected are beginning with the end in mind of specifically selling the data?
Okay, not that often in the past, okay? But they are now looking to do that. And there is one company I know that does that, and that's their whole goal, and it's actually less important to them than the product that they sell, because the product that they sell costs them, it's a wash to sell it to the consumer, all right? But they know that they're going to get this data out of it that becomes a whole alternative source of revenue, and that's really the game, in a sense, right? So I'm not seeing it that often, but I'm seeing it more and more, is what I'm trying to say. And I'm seeing companies who are in the IoT space looking at that very closely now and making inroads in doing it. It's a difficult question to answer, but again, in 5 years, it will be everybody, okay? Yeah.
Any other questions? Well, in that case, Michael, thank you very much. It was very informative. As you may know, we actually have a smart home pavilion in Lakeside Center, if you want to take a look at that. Otherwise, as I was saying, we'll do a very short summary on this on our news site, homepage news, but within a reasonable amount of time, this will be an audio file on the IHA website, so you can go back and revisit it. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thank you.